Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. I am Satchmo, fighting the flu and the cold to talk Michigan State sports with you. So the cough button will be handy. Joining me in a few moments, as he does each and every podcast, will be the Thin Man DB. We got a great show for you today. Oh, DB's earlier than expected. DB, you
Greetings
said you were going to be playing.
Spartan Nation. Greetings, Spartan Nation.
Yes. Greetings indeed. I was saying, DB, you said you were going to be late, but for you, this is actually on time.
Well, I warned you in advance that I could be tardy, and that's just, I guess, what they call communication. And I weathered the storm, as Coach Mike D'Antonio would say.
Oh, yes, Coach Mike D'Antonio. We will get to the ESPN full pod at the end of the show. Guys.
Yeah.
Let's face it, we need to talk about that. But we're going to be starting off with college basketball, men's and women's. We will then move our way to college football and talk a little bit about spring practice and then a lot about this camp controversy that Jim Harbaugh has totally screwed over the rest of the country on. No shocking there. Harbaugh screwed the country. That should be like a running headline that you can just keep up with. And then... then we'll talk a little bit about this whole ESPN thing, and then we'll get into the Red Wings and Tigers, and so that's going to be the general direction the show goes in. A little news to lead the show. One, Josh Jackson not coming to East Lansing, DB, not coming to Michigan State. He's going to Kansas. Rock chop, Jayhawks, Jackson.
So the Twitter sphere was lighting up the last couple of days with the ideas that Jackson would be going to Kansas. So everybody who said that is right. And, it's all these are kids. They make decisions. Spartan Nation, just, we still have a good basketball team. Let's be above this. Josh Jackson is a kid. He wants to go play at Kansas. Let him go play at Kansas. Respect the decision.
Yeah, stay classy, Spartan Nation. Stay classy.
Yeah.
In the end, the Michigan State basketball hopes did not rest on Josh Jackson coming to Michigan State, but rather who will be staying at Michigan State and who will be leaving. We already know two people that are leaving. One a surprise, one not a surprise. Javon Best and Marvin Clark, maybe both headed out of town. I would rank Javon Best not a surprise, but I would rank Marvin Clark a pretty big surprise.
Yeah. I was surprised to hear Clark was leaving, too. What do you make of that?
I make of that he's looking at the rotation next year, and next year is going to be a big year for him, and he's wondering where exactly he's going to fit into the rotation. Because Schilling is back. If Deontay Davis comes back, then you've got your starters at the 5 and the 4, which is where Clark is going to play. You've got Tum Tum Nairn and Aaron Harris slated at the 1 and the 2. And then you've got these four freshmen who are coming in who all play the wing position who are really good. And you look at that and you're like, all right, where is he going to get his minutes? Alvin Ellis is going to get minutes at a wing position. And so you start thinking about it. Cassius Winston's going to get minutes at a backup point. That leaves three wing positions. And Marvin Clark's looking at it going, you want to know what? Let me go to a place that's best for my future where I can actually develop my skill set and get playing time. Because the bottom line is, he's not going to go to the NBA unless he gets minutes. And he's not guaranteed to get minutes at Michigan State. So he's making the best decision for himself. And that really doesn't bother me. The same way Izzo makes the best decision for who's going to coach. Players got to make the best decision for himself, but he's decided not that he doesn't like Michigan State, but that the minutes just aren't going to be there for him on a consistent enough basis for him to achieve his goals. And as a result, he's got to take his talents elsewhere. And I was surprised because I thought he could crack the rotation and be a solid contributor. He has a skill set Izzo normally wants out of a power forward, the ability to shoot the three, ability to drive to the basket, rebound, play with toughness. But apparently he wasn't feeling it, and he decided to move out. What did you think of this whole thing?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised on Clark, and but I agree completely with your assessment. And a lot of times I think when you see kids transfer, I think that's playing time is usually probably 9 times out of 10 the reason why you see kids go. Not all the time. Sometimes it's coach personality conflict. Case in point, Corey effing Lucius, I think, was a little bit more of that than playing time. That might have weighed a little, but I think in this case that wasn't the case as far as we can tell. And so, in a way, Satchmo, I don't fault Clark for going.
Yeah, I will say that this is probably going to hurt Michigan State more in 2 years than it will next year. Because if this incoming recruiting class is as good as hype, there's going to be a lot of one and dones. And then they're going to really wish Marvin Clark was around for his senior year.
Yeah. And then David Satchmo is still not decided, right?
Yeah, that's the other big factor, right? So, really, Michigan State's national championship hopes at this point turn on whether Davis declares for the NBA or not. And I thought Izzo said something very interesting. It is basically that Davis doesn't like school, but what kid does? I thought that was very funny. and so now it really comes down to DB, with Davis has to make a decision. He could go pro and get a pro contract. But the bottom line with Davis is he's not going to make an NBA roster to start his career. He's going to end up playing in the NBA D League. And there's nothing wrong with playing in the NBA D League. And so the question is whether he goes and he's willing to play in the D League and work his way up from that while making NBA money, or whether he doesn't want to play in the D League. He enjoys being in college, not the school part, but in college with his teammates and with the coaching staff and the structure and making his progress that way. So a lot of it comes down to, does he want to be in the D League and living independently, or does he want a more structured environment and stay in college? I would suggest he stay in college for another year. But I have no idea what his finances are. I don't know what his situation is. It's really easy for me to make that recommendation. However, based on his basketball development, I think he needs another year in college.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I agree on that point. I think, but I think with what Tom Izzo has coming in, overall still, the Spartans have enough depth here that, you can't discount people leaving, and you can't discount, Valentine and Costello graduating and Bryn Forbes. Certainly the Spartans will feel those things. You can't discount senior leadership, but at the same time, sometimes guys with no experience can step up and do well. And, Duke's had that. Syracuse has had that. So you never know.
I have a feeling that next year's team is going to frustrate Tom Izzo as much as he loved this year's team. Next year's team is going to be as frustrating. And it's going to be frustrating for Spartan fans, and it's going to be frustrating for Tom Izzo. Not because the team won't be good. It will be good. It's just going to do stupid stuff on the court for a good chunk of the season. And sometimes it's going to be able to overcome it, and sometimes it won't. And that's the nature of playing freshman. The hope is you get a Kentucky-like thing where the calendar hits March and they figure it out. But that's the hope. That's not a guarantee. We saw even with a projected one done player like Deontay Davis, right? That he never ended up taking, I mean, he had some dominant games, right? But he was never the big go-to player that everyone thought he was going to be. So with freshmen, you really have no idea. But the hope is that once the calendar hits March, and this is clearly Izzo's most talented recruiting class, that all the pieces come together and you have what forms the national championship run.
That's, well, speaking of national championships, I want to just for a couple minutes, I like to do this, and I like to think about these things when Spartan teams don't that had the potential, like this team had this year, to go to the Final Four. I like to think about what could have been. You know, we can do that as fans. And so I wanted to get your take on looking at the teams that the Spartans would have played going down through the different brackets in the tournament this year, if you thought that they could have won or lost based on the whole body of work now, what we saw. And so I want to start back and just pretend for a minute that the Spartans defeated Middle Tennessee and went to play Syracuse in the second round and kind of go from there and guide us through here to see what you thought about, you know, each round here, the teams that we would have played.
I think they could have won every game except for the Villanova game. And not because Michigan State isn't better than Villanova, they are. It's just Villanova played the perfect Final Four. And when you play the perfect Final Four, you're going to win. And Villanova played the perfect Final Four. They were unconscious. They couldn't miss shots.
Yeah.
But I think they legitimately could have beaten every other team down the path.
Yeah, I think so. I think they would have had, as you thought on one of our podcasts before the tournament started, that Syracuse would have given the Spartans fits. And I think that's true. I mean, I think we would have been looking at a 5-point, very score in the 50s type of game, Satchmo, against Syracuse, I believe. That would have given the Spartans fits, and then Tom Izzo would have sweated that one out. The Spartans would have won. And a Sweet 16 opponent for the Spartans would have been, I'm drawing a blank. Who did Syracuse beat? It was,
well, they
not
beat
Iowa
Virginia,
State.
Right?
Yeah, they beat Virginia in the region final, which,
yeah.
You think the Spartans would have beaten Virginia again round three?
Yeah.
Who was the Sweet 16 game?
I don't remember the Sweet 16 game, but I did want to make this point. Even Jim Boeheim thought Syracuse was going to lose to Michigan State. He was like, yeah, we were basically going to the tournament to win our first game and lose to Michigan State. That's what he said on TV.
That's funny. Yeah, Syracuse had a nice run, but they got a real break. Every time I saw Syracuse win, I was like, well, put an asterisk by that one because thank Middle Tennessee for that one. Yeah, I agree with you. I actually think, though, Satchmo, I'll disagree slightly. I do agree the Spartans would have lost to Villanova in the championship. Villanova was playing lights-out basketball. They had some great wins. They surprised the heck out of me. I doubted them a little bit to get that far, and they were a great team. But I have to say that North Carolina, I think, would have had our number again. It would have been a little closer, but I think North Carolina would have had our number in the Final Four, I believe, the way this worked out. I felt like that Carolina team was not perfect, but I think they would have won.
Possibly. I mean, it could be, but it's hard to tell, right? Because North Carolina beat Syracuse, and that wasn't really a game, right?
Right.
Excuse me.
Yeah, the Spartans would have matched up better against North Carolina than Syracuse did. So that much I would say.
I apologize for being slow on the cough button.
Quite all right. But, yeah, now here's another question for you, not to do with the Spartans, but when you saw the highlights of the Villanova-North Carolina game, first of all, did that last play, the Villanova, wonderful play by Jay Wright, the coach, that he drew up, and I think he had a name for it. I think it was called Nova. I could be wrong. He took that out of the Tom Izzo playbook from circa 2010 against Maryland, Satchmo, the Corey Effing Lucius shot.
Yeah, so there are a lot of things I don't understand. How do you not guard the three-point shooter?
The guy that's scoring every
basket.
Oh, my God. Yeah, North Carolina went to sleep on that guy.
Excuse me.
But that's a fault of North Carolina. That's the criticism of North Carolina this year, Sashmon. When I watch them play sometimes, that's exactly what they would do at times. They would sort of go to sleep, and that lends up to your argument that the Spartans could have beaten North Carolina because sometimes they would go to sleep, and that's why Roy Williams was pulling his hair out all the time with that team. They had talent, but little things like that, and you got to give it up for Villanova. They had nothing to lose there. I mean, the game was going to go to overtime if they missed that shot, but it was wonderful. And I have to say, it was one of the more exciting finishes to a national championship game in a long time. I mean, I rate that very highly. We've seen a lot of them, Sadamone, but that's one of the more exciting ones.
That's definitely one of the more exciting finishes. My two questions defensively is why do you leave one of their best shooters open to shoot the three? And then the other is why do you let their best guard catch the ball? Anyone else has to catch the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that Eric Cadano or whatever, however you say that guy's name, the unpronounceable name, kid, you know, he's the guy. He's the quarterback. What a great play. What a complete fake. And the whole North Carolina defense just was like, what? You know, they thought he was driving to the basket with the ball, and they should have known better. But, a lot of mistakes there on that, but it was a wonderful shot.
It was a wonderful shot. And, I mean, that's the thing, right, is in defense, I mean, when you're playing defense, especially in late-clock situations, you have to force certain things. For example, if you're playing Michigan State, you make sure Denzel Valentine doesn't catch the ball, and you make sure you've got a guy glued to Bryn Forbes to make anyone else beat you, right?
Yeah.
That's what made the Tim Bogracus fifth option, sixth option, seventh option, eighth option three so miraculous, right? Because I think that was against Kentucky, wasn't it?
Yes, that's the that is my favorite Tom Izzo moment when he's just like looking out at the floor after Bogracus made that shot, and he's like, "What the hell?" Like, but it looked like he was pissed that it even happened.
Well, exactly. But the other team did what they're supposed to do. They took away all the other options and forced Bogracus to shoot it. And that was North Carolina's job.
Right.
Now, granted, the way Villanova was playing, whoever shot the ball was going in. I mean, that's just the way they were playing.
Yeah.
But you also have to believe, and I think North Carolina believed this, if this game gets to overtime, North Carolina wins.
Yeah, now that's an interesting point. I think you're right on about that. I think North Carolina had enough in them that I think that they pull that out. It's tight, you know, it's very tight. But I feel like North Carolina would have had a little run in them. You didn't want to give North Carolina five more minutes of game time. I think they would have done the job. I agree.
Yeah. Shifting gears from men's to women's basketball, DB. First of all, kudos to UConn for winning another one.
Yeah.
And can we just say how stupid Dan Shaughnessy is? I lived in the Boston area for 4 or 5 years or longer. Just having to read Shaughnessy on a regular basis was a nightmare. Go out and say UConn is ruining women's college basketball is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
UConn's the only reason to watch women's college basketball.
Yeah. No, I agree. You know, the thing is, Sashmo, to your point, I mean, everyone says, you know, even NPR had a piece about how, you know, is the women's game suffering? And one of the commentators that they had on NPR talking about that basically said, while it may seem that way to some fans, the fact is that the other coaches can do something about it. And the other thing, too, is North Carolina, UConn is going to come upon a year here where they have, you know, maybe a freshman class that's going to fall short. So, you know, the other teams need to rise up and figure out how they can beat UConn. I mean, UConn is the destination for these women to play, but they can't get every single woman to play. There's only so many seats on the bench. So do something about it, right?
And the bottom line is this is the year. This upcoming year is the year, because a lot of players haven't wanted to go to UConn because they're not going to get any minutes because they've had this great team in place for 3 or 4 years. And so those players have ended up elsewhere. UConn doesn't have – I mean, look, they still have a good basketball team, and they're going to be fine. But they're not going to be UConn, right? They're not going to be the dominant basketball team everyone knows. And so this is the year for everyone to beat them. Now it's time to woman up, and let's play this out.
Yeah. Woman up. I like that.
Yeah. I thought you might. Well, the ladies, the Lady Spartans are going to be one woman short, DB. Ariel Powers
going to WNBA. Mm.
How about that? Now, this isn't something we're used to at Michigan State.
Yeah.
Or let's face it, women's college basketball in general. You know, people foregoing their seat. Yeah, women, Ariel Powers foregoing her last year in school to, and this is legitimately what you said, chase her dreams to play in the WNBA. And this is how the WNBA has changed things, right, TV? Because 10 years ago, before the WNBA came into existence, no one dreamed of it. Now the WNBA became a league, and for 5-6 years, you know, this is what they did. They graduated and they went there. But now girls grow up dreaming to play in the WNBA, DB, and it's a different environment we're in.
Right. Yeah, you know, you had Brittany Griner, but that's really about it. You know, you don't see that a lot, I agree, and you definitely don't see it with Spartans. But, you know, on the other hand, it shows you that what a job that Susie Merchant is doing with the program, that can happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so, look, good for Ariel Powers. It is a major blow to Michigan State. I think if Ariel Powers returns, this is a Final Four capable team.
Mm-hmm. I fully agree.
And without Ariel Powers, yeah, maybe they make the NCAA tournament again. But with Ariel Powers, Final Four capable team. Tough blow for Susie Merchant. But good for Ariel Powers. And good for the growth of women's basketball. This is actually happening. And good for the WNBA that they've got women who are growing up, girls who are growing up into women, dreaming of becoming WNBA players. That's actually really good for the league.
Yes. Agreed.
All right. You ready for college football, DB? You want to talk some more college hoops?
I think I'm ready for college football here. We have a lot of discussion points.
All right, well, let's start with spring practice before we get into the troll in Ann Arbor. quarterback is the big battle there. Look, there are big battles all over the place. They want a running back. They don't want to do a running back by committee. They want someone to grab the job. The linebacking core looks deep. The secondary looks better. Vontae Copeland is coming back from injury. All that stuff is good. The defensive line looks like it has some players, has to sort itself out. All that's nice. The big battle, DB, is at quarterback. O'Connor versus Damian Terry. And this is how far, DB, Michigan State's come as a program. When they had that battle back in a couple years ago with Maxwell and Connor Cook, Michigan State fans were ready to jump on the freshman quarterback, Terry, and say, just save us from all of this. Now, Michigan State fans seem to be a lot more patient and a lot more savvy. They're like, you want to know what? A freshman can't possibly lead this team. Let's wait and see which one's going to turn out, O'Connor or Terry. Is that a sign of maturity? What's going on? Is that a sign of, all right, we're going to customer success? We trust the coaches. What's going on with the Spartan fan base here, DB? This is a much different vibe than 2 or 3 years ago.
You're right, it is. And I think it's all those things you just said. I mean, we've seen the success with the decisions that Mark Antonio has made as quarterback. We saw Connor Cook. We saw Kirk Cousins. And so I think, and I was in that camp too. I was one of those people, if you go back and listen, in the Rose Bowl season that I said, let's put Damian Terry on the field. I didn't like what was happening. But I've changed my tune as well. And so I think I stand with all the rest of Spartan Nation that has matured. And I think because we've had the success, the fans understand and believe, and so they know the coaches will make the best decision.
It's interesting that the coaches have learned from that process the last time, too. So they're not going to anoint anyone. They're going to let it play out in practice. But more importantly, they're going to let it play out in games next year, too. So there's a chance during the non-conference schedule next year, we might be three games in and not know who the starter is. Does that bother you much?
No, because I think we kind of went through this, you know, 4 years ago with Connor Cook and Andrew Maxwell. And I think also, and fans will remember this, we got a little tiny taste in the Ohio State game this year that the Spartans won of that sort of two-headed monster going on out there with O'Connor and Damian Terry. We saw a glimpse at that moment of what things might possibly be like. And so it's interesting. I think fans are actually going to get kind of excited about it. So, no, it doesn't bother me. Are you bothered?
No, it doesn't bother me either. I mean, I think, look, it's one thing to excel in practice. It's another thing to excel in a game. And that's something that these two players haven't really had much of a chance to do. And we need to see them under live fire. There is one argument that does intrigue me, which is if the competition is really close, just handing the reins to Terry, because Terry will be there for 2 years and O'Connor will only be there for one. And that's something that does intrigue me, because you want to maximize Terry's 2 years as opposed to getting one good year out of O'Connor and one good year out of Terry, but you lose a year's worth of growth out of Terry in the process.
All right. Yeah, I just think, you know, sure, those players didn't have a lot of time to play, but, you know, the Ohio State game, to me, showed me, surprised, I was very surprised at how well that actually worked. And so, you know, it's not inconceivable we could go through even longer than three games.
Yeah.
To see. It's not out of the question.
No, it's not out of the question. And I got to admit, I do like the swagger that O'Connor has, right? Saying, you know, he managed the Ohio State game. This year, he doesn't want to manage games. He wants to win games. I like that sort of cockiness and swagger. And identifying the growth and the potential and that sort of thing. So that part does intrigue me. But I think we're at a good place here. I think we know who the two main guys are going to be, and that's what counts.
Yeah.
All right. We've been teasing it all show. Time to talk about the rat-faced Fink that operates down in Ann Arbor. Well, the beauty of teasing it all show, DB, is you get to, like, lob more insults his way.
And none of us here in Spartan Nation would ever resist the opportunity to lob insults at Harbaugh. It's like eating a good pizza.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the down in Columbus, they eat Papa John's. Over in Ann Arbor, they eat Domino's.
Yeah, they usually eat Papa John's when they're sad in Columbus.
Oh, so sad. I think what it is they eat cottage gin when they're happy in Ann Arbor and Domino's when they're sad. So Jim Harbaugh, in case you didn't know who the rat Fink in question was, operated all these satellite camps all over the place, you know, went down and held spring practice in Florida. And as a result, these camps have been banned. But not only have these camps away from your state and camp has been banned, but coaches going to coach in other camps have been banned as well, which is a big blow to camps like Sound Mind and Body, which was a big camp in the Michigan and Detroit area, which was a big recruiting ground for, which has been a big recruiting ground for Michigan State. but not just a big recruiting now for Michigan State, but as Urban Meyer, the Papa John's Pizza Eating coach, pointed out, it's a good place for MAC coaches to go and recruit and other coaches to go recruit people who aren't in the limelight and get to build a connection with these players. More importantly, it was a way for players outside of the 5- and 4-star recruits to make a name for themselves and to show themselves to college coaches and show that they're ready. DB, this seems like this is hurting the college football environment, this NCAA ruling, and it's all because Jim Harbaugh was shameless about thumbing his nose at the NCAA and saying, hey, look at me, look at what I can do.
Yeah, Harbaugh overdid it, and I think Mark D'Antonio made a comment about abuse, and he's exactly right. I mean, if Harbaugh had sort of minded himself a little bit and hadn't been, you know, showing off, I think, you know, that stuff could have continued. You know who made an interesting point about it, Satchmo, that made me actually, for a few minutes, think that it was probably an okay idea that Harbaugh was doing it, was Mike Leach. He's the coach at Washington State, I believe now, Mike Leach,
the
said that. Leach said that he was very upset about the NCAA's ruling because he can't go hold his camps in inner city Southern California now, and it's not giving kids an opportunity to see the Washington State program that might otherwise have seen it. So. You know, those kind of arguments made me pause. But on the other hand, Harbaugh is the one to blame here.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it wasn't just the fact that Harbaugh did it, right? It was just the way he went about doing it, his dismissive approach to everyone else that criticized it, and his willing to actually go out and deliberately tweet people publicly about it. And not only that, but just turn the whole thing into a traveling circus. It didn't sit well, the powers that be. And Harbaugh doesn't care, right? Because for him, he's winning the news cycle. So he's like sort of a modern-day coach, right? He's about winning the news cycle. He's about winning the Twitter war. He's about winning a Twitter battle. And so the kids see that, and they respond to it because the kids are on Twitter, and they like that, and they're attracted to the program and attracted to the coach as a result. But in the process of doing that, he ruined it for everyone else.
Yeah, and the ACC and the SEC, Satchmo, had a lot to – funny that the ACC would have a lot to say about it, considering they have, what, one good football program.
Well, half a good football program, right?
And you can't count Notre Dame because they compete 5 games a year against ACC competition, but the ACC and the SEC, we knew the SEC was going to be very loud about that. They were from the beginning, although somehow the University of Florida fittingly participated with Michigan in that whole sham. But anyway, you know, I actually, that the camps didn't bother me as much as what Michigan does with this recruiting festival that's like NFL draft day on ESPN, Satchmo. I'm more bothered by that one. They need to clamp down on that stuff. I think that's unnecessary. It's excessive.
I agree. And, you know, kudos to Todd McShay for failing to tell ESPN he was going to do this. Way to be professional, Todster. all right. I think that's a good place to leave it. No sense to beat this up. Let's switch gears again. Got a lot of Red Wings stuff to talk about. Wait a minute. Before we talk about the Red Wings, so we want to talk about college.
Let's spend a few minutes on the Frozen Four and one particular college hockey coach who still has a job.
All right. North Dakota State wins the
Frozen North Dakota.
Oh, North Dakota. My bad. North Dakota.
Yeah, Jeff Enyan would have been excited. I think he's a jackrabbit.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. We apologize for exciting jackrabbits all over the world.
yeah, you don't want to excite jackrabbits. They'll make more jackrabbits.
Yeah, exciting jackrabbits. I mean, we got to keep the jackrabbit population under control. That's not what we were aiming to do. So North Dakota wins the Frozen Four. They beat Quinnipiac, proving that Quinnipiac is more than a place that does presidential polls. Final score was 5-1, DB. It was a rout.
5-2. North Dakota, that's one just overwhelmed. QPAC, as they call them. I like that. QPAC. North Dakota, just a lot more skill on the ice than Quinnipiac. I was really rooting hard for Quinnipiac because, you know, they're one of those small schools that hockey's the big sport there. And this is the second time, Satchmo, in the last 3 or 4 years, they've been in the final game and came up short. And, you know, but what a program they've built there. I think the Quinnipiac hockey program might be better than a particular school's hockey program in East Lansing.
I believe it is. QPAC, as you like to call them, has, or as others like to call them, has definitely surpassed Michigan State in terms of a quality hockey program. They're sort of the Gonzaga or Butler of hockey, right? Small school that consistently reaches the Frozen Four can possibly win it all. It's a damn shame they can't coordinate with their super PAC. Otherwise, they would win it all. Oh, yes, indeed. But you are right, DB. Quinnipiac has surpassed Michigan State in terms of a hockey program. And Michigan State, as the athletic director announced earlier, is keeping Tom Anastas, the hockey coach, around. Because apparently, excuse me, here's the interesting thing. And this time I coughed to cover up some swearing under my breath. and so apparently, this is what I find intriguing. Apparently, when Anastas sat down with the AD Hollis and mapped out a plan for hockey, part of the plan was honoring all the commitments Comley made to middle school kids, right? Saying, you're coming to Michigan State. And you read this, right? And as a result, Anastas and Hollis knew that Michigan State's recruiting level and talent level was going to be there for 5 to 6 years. Who willingly does that?
No.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And so now Hollis's hope and Anastas's hope is now that they've honored and moved beyond the commitments that Comley made, that they can start rebuilding the program. DB. I've heard a lot of crazy stories in my day, but this takes the cake. What on earth is going on here?
Yeah, this is ridiculous. And this whole idea, Satchmo, that we're waiting for 14-year-old recruits to go through the system is insane. I mean, they're 14 years old. And, yeah, I guess you want to make a commitment to them, but this sounds like a big, fat excuse to me. Like, it sounds like an excuse not to have a system or a plan or a coach or, you know, I'm just and honoring Comley commitments. I mean, that was the problem. That's why Tom Anastas was brought in. And why are you even bothering with Rick Comley? I mean, are his recruits that good? I mean, I just feel I've never heard a college hockey program say the things that are coming out of East Lansing, Satchmo. I feel like I'm in the twilight zone.
Yeah, it's almost like they said, yes, our plan was to suck for 5 years, but now we're turning it around.
I'm not buying any of this. I'm going back to our original reaction to this in March 2011. Whenever that was, you and I think we used the words Matt Millen move. And I sort of feel like I'm not backing down from that stance until I see consistency. And I'm not even talking about one. I don't care if Michigan State somehow rises above everyone and wins the national title next year. I'll still call that a fluke, just like it was with Comley, because I'm not buying it. I'm not buying anything they're selling me. I want Michigan State hockey to succeed. Tom Anastas is a smart man who knows a lot about marketing sports, but I don't think he's got what it takes to be behind the bench.
The whole thing's just bizarre. And
yeah.
Did you see this? Which school was it? Was it Western Michigan? Someone hired our Tony Granato?
Wisconsin. Wisconsin, because they fired Mike Eaves, their longtime coach, and Wisconsin. Give them credit, Satchmo. They've had only two or three years, without being in the NCAA tournament. And Wisconsin, which evidently cares about its hockey program, said, no, we have standards here, Mike Eaves, and sorry, we know you're a Badger at heart, but move along. We're going to get somebody in here who's going to change it up, and good for them. I'm jealous of Wisconsin.
And this is exactly what we've been begging Michigan State to do, right? Hire a coach from the pro ranks that's going to stir it up and attract talent.
Yeah.
Just
I'm insanely jealous, and I'm baffled. I like Tom and I'm trying to, you know, I wanted this to succeed. You know, we'll stand behind our coach. We stood behind our coach. We can't stand behind this coach anymore. I'm not, for the first time in my life, even by the Connolly era, I'm so unexcited about Spartan hockey now. And how do you make kids excited about this program if the fans can't get excited about this? I mean, Mark Hollis is just, we're just wasting time, I feel like.
Just terrible.
It's really, really surprising to me, considering how well all the other sports have flourished at Michigan State since, you know, Mark Hollis' tenure began, and football has just become a phenomenon in and of itself. There's no reason why hockey can't be good. And heck, you know, one of our friends even said, you know, what about a Danton Cole who's cut his teeth coaching at other schools or in the U.S. development program? Or, you know, even somebody along that line would make me excited to make that kind of a change. This is just baffling. It's frustrating. And this team is just, they're the bottom of the barrel of the Big Ten, and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere to hurt.
No, and it's so hard to watch. It's really hard to watch. It's our school, and I feel like Ohio State hockey, no offense, Ohio State, but I feel like we're your program now. When Ron Mason was coaching Michigan State, and you played Ohio State, it was like, yeah, doormat, next game. And once in a while, they upset somebody, and that's it. And that's what Spartan hockey has become. And it's a sad, sad
game. Yeah, we're basically Northwestern.
Yeah, we're the Northwestern of the Big Ten, exactly. And Notre Dame, which I don't think we touched on, will be competing with us in a couple of years and will beat us all the time, too.
Yeah, we'll beat us all the time, too. Or if you don't want to go with Northwestern, because Northwestern's become competitive in recent years, we're the Rutgers of Big Ten hockey.
Oh, that's awful. I just puked in my mouth.
Oh, just terrible. All right, let's stick with hockey.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And I just want to say one more thing real quick, and then we're going to jump in the NHL. College hockey, Frozen Four, was in Tampa again this year, Satchmo, for the second time in the last 4 years. I think, Satchmo, and you will agree with me 100%, the Frozen Four should be in Tampa every single year.
Absolutely.
Yep.
The Frozen Four should be exclusively in warm-weather destinations, and yes. Tampa's the best place for it. And the reason why I say that is because everyone's like, what are you talking about? No, you screw that. You reward the Final Four teams with – it's like a bowl game, right? You go down there. You get them warm weather. Get their fans warm weather. And if you keep it in the same place every year, it becomes this great tradition. You go down. You enjoy the warm weather. You enjoy the locale. The hockey's great. It's a great ice rink down there. The entertainment options are outstanding. The restaurants are a bit lacking, but the entertainment options are outstanding. It really is a fantastic place to go and watch it. And people that have been to the Outback Bowl They love it. They understand what we're talking about. This is a great mm-hmm. destination. The locals like their hockey down there. That's become a hockey hotbed. So they'll come out and support the tournament. Your fans are more likely to go down to Tampa than they are to drive out to Albany. I mean, who wants to drive out to Albany to watch hockey?
Yeah, the crowd for the final night for the championship was great, and the entire state of North Dakota looked like it was there. I mean, it's a destination, and keep it there. Keep doing it there every year, or at least some equivalent warm weather place. You know, you can go to L.A. once in a while, or it was in Anaheim once a long time ago. The Spartans played in that Frozen Four or South Beach or whatever, but I agree. Make it a destination. Tampa's the best one, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that. All right, let's talk a little Red Wings. The Red Wings, for better or for worse, and if you ask me, for worse, back into the playoffs, Stevie.
Oh, yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10. All right, so we should preface this by saying the players on this team are extremely thrilled that they made the playoffs. They didn't want to be the team that broke the streak, right? So it's 25 straight years they've been in the playoffs. Or 26. 25 or 26. I think it's 25.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Something like that.
Something like that. So the players are excited about it. But on a scale of 1 to 10 dB, being 0 or 1, I really wish they would have missed the playoffs. To 10, woohoo, we're going to win a Stanley Cup. How excited are you about the Red Wings making the playoffs?
Well, I'm a little over the halfway mark. I'm probably a 6.5 or a 7. I'm glad that the streak continued. I want to see the Wings in the playoffs. I want to see them do well. I'm realistic to know that this team would be lucky to get, you know, to the second round. They might be able to get to the second round this time. I think that's a possibility just because they know this opponent. They had them last year, and this Tampa Bay team is beat up. They're hurting, actually. And so I think the Red Wings stand a decent chance, not perfect chance, but a decent chance to maybe advance into the second round. But I'm excited about it, but not excited like, woohoo, we're going to win it all. No, that's not going to happen. In fact, I'm not sure anybody from the East is going to win the Stanley Cup when it's all said and done. But that aside, I'm a little bit more than I think you are, Satchmo.
Is this what we're reduced to as Red Wings fans, hoping to upset another team in the first round?
We are reduced to that right now, yes. I think it's just the state of where the Red Wings are at, yes.
All right. If you put me on this scale, I'm at a 0.
Mm-hmm.
Complete and total 0. I would have been completely okay with the Red Wings missing the playoff because it would have improved their draft position. And to me, stocking this team with talent has to be the paramount driving force in all decisions moving forward. And I'm not saying we want to go Sam Hinkie, Philadelphia 76ers tanking, right? I'm not saying that. However, this team lacks talent.
Yeah.
It's plain and simple. All right.
Yeah.
Take a look at the blue line, DB. We have one legitimate first pair defenseman in Danny DeKeyser. Cronwall, Erickson, no longer belong in the first pair. And the rest of them are like fifth and sixth defensemen.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
All right. If you take a look at the forward, you have Pavel Datsyuk, who this is probably going to be his last year, moving back to Russia. You have Zetterberg, who feels like a second or third line forward at this point. You've got Larkin and the fast kid, Anastasia. All right, that's it.
Yeah.
There's no talent. I mean, there's this huge talent gap.
There's a huge talent gap, yeah.
And how do you restock the talent? You restock it in the draft. You get bad. And the Red Wings have refused to do that. They've always operated under the assumption, under the belief that they could reload and restock while maintaining this playoff winning streak and by being a competitive hockey team. And they might have been able to do that in the late 90s, early 2000s, but that's because the Red Wings scouted Europe better than anyone out there. Now everyone scouts Europe the way the Red Wings do, right? So the Red Wings don't have a competitive advantage the way they used to. And let's face it, other teams are doing a better job of managing the cap than the Red Wings.
Right, exactly. And the Red Wings at that time, Satchmo, that you referenced, when they won those Stanley Cups in the late 90s and early 2000s, they were a destination for free agents as well. And the Red Wings had a good mixture of, you know, free agents and people that they developed and scouted, and the Russian five and that sort of thing. And now it's a collection of parts thrown together. And it's not that they're all bad, but it's just, you know, it's still a great organization. It's still a good, you know, team, but it's not a team that, it's not a Stanley Cup team. It's not what we're used to. It's just, okay, we're just, our head's just above water. And I kind of feel like the window of that, as you call it, Satchmo, building through the draft, shut on the Wings a couple of years ago. I think the time to have done it was sort of looking ahead, two or three years ago. They could have done that, and maybe the Wings would be in a position here now where you'd say, oh, yeah, they got some talent on this team, and combine them together with your Riley Sheehans and your Abdelkaders and, you know, some of those. Then we'd be talking about maybe some real exciting things here. But instead, yeah, we're sort of where we are, and the tanking might have to happen when we go into the new arena then. And it might be a little uglier.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, right? And the weird thing is this streak has taken up a life of its own, not among the fan base, right? Because I think the fan base has stopped caring about the streak. In fact, I think the fan base has stopped caring about the team. Because this team, look, no one's afraid to play this team, right? And there's nothing inspiring about the type of hockey they play. They feel like just any other hockey team out there. So I think the fan base is legitimate, has stopped caring about the team. The only people that care about the streak are the people working the Red Wings organization at this point.
Yeah. You're truly right, yes.
And until they stop caring about the streak, the Red Wings are going nowhere.
Yeah.
That said,
you know, go ahead.
We should pause for a moment to marvel at the career of Pavel Datsyuk.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Yeah, because if this is indeed his last year in Detroit, and all indications point to this being his last year in Detroit, Hall of Famer for sure, right?
Oh, without a doubt, yes.
He said something interesting in his interview with Mitch Albom, that he said he believed in the NHL. And it wasn't just him that believed it. Other, even Lariano believes it as well. Players like Datsyuk and Lariano, who can see the game unfolding three or four steps ahead, are often penalized, are often restricted from playing the way, that they want to play. Which is with the creative flair, understanding where people are going advanced, and constantly being told, keep it simple, keep it simple. Is that a fair criticism of the current state of the NHL right now?
It's a very complex question.
That's what I deal with, DB. Complex questions and insulting Jim Harbaugh. That's what you get out of it.
Satchmo, I'm going very deep here. Take me some pondering to think about that.
I'll go first.
All right, yeah, you go first. Then.
I think he's on to something. I think the NHL right now is a very risk-averse culture, which means that they like to keep everything simple. North and south, chip the puck in, hold on to the puck. I think puck possession has become more of a style than it has been in the past. So you see a lot more of that. But the teams that take the risks, that are willing to play that style, the Chicago Blackhawks, for example, those are the teams that win. But they have the talent to do so. But the other teams that don't have the talent to do so, the coaches are afraid to try this stuff. So for them, it's keep it simple, keep it simple, keep it simple. you know, if they keep it simple, the coaches are more likely to hang on to their job instead of letting the players be players. And they're like, well, let me keep it simple. At least I'll be able to hold on to my job.
Yeah, I agree, and that's and when you play like that, you're going to get fired.
Exactly, and in fact, I would argue that this is part of the problem that Washington has had, in that they tried to put the shackles on Alexander Ovechkin. There's no accident that Ovechkin's best years came under Bruce Boudreau, right? Because that's when he had the most amount of freedom. To me, the correlation is direct. And then you got other coaches that wanted him to keep it simple, and he didn't play as well. And now
right.
he's got more freedom again, and he's playing better. To me, it's clear.
Mm-hmm.
But for coaches, creativity and players that can see the game 3, 4, 5 steps ahead scares the living daylights out of them. Because all of a sudden, they're no longer controlling what's on the ice. They have to trust the player. As much as coaches emphasize trust, 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 they don't really trust the players. I mean, if coaches had their way, this would be a video game, right? It would be one of those games, you know, the bubble hockey where you have the rods where you pull the players back and forth. If the coaches, coaches are enough of a control freak where they would love that. You remember the Jetsons? And they would show football in like the 25th or 26th century. Which was basically
yeah.
coaches controlling
yeah.
robots on the field.
yeah.
yeah. That's sort of how I think NHL coaches are like. Is if they could get that, they would be in heaven. But barring that, it's keep it simple.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you had
I agree, and I think you talk about scary teams and creativity limiting the scariness. Like Barry Trotz inherited the Caps at the right time. Just as an example, I find the Caps right now to, for once, finally be a very scary team because of him and the fact that he's gotten a mature version of Alex Ovechkin who was able to find the creativity and the offensive touch in the Bruce Boudreau system. But now Ovechkin's developed into a very good two-way player because of Trotz. And based on that alone, you have a very you have a scary team, and you have a coach that really trusts his team because his captain is doing it. And so those kind of teams, and the Penguins again, very hot right now, Blackhawks, a lot of those teams in the West are scary. Sachmo, LA is good again. Nashville is good. San Jose looks very good. Boudreau is Anaheim doing well. You can go down a huge list in the Western Conference of scariness. And you're exactly right. The Wings don't approach that.
What's funny is for the better part of a decade, DB, maybe better part of 15 years, the best hockey in the country has been played in the Western Conference. Yet the hockey media, and I put the air quotes there, tends to focus exclusively on East Coast hockey.
Yeah.
And at the detriment, and I think that's actually hurt the league.
Yeah.
So they focus on East Coast hockey. Then the East Coast teams are terrible, and then they get bounced out of the playoffs, and then no one's interested. And you got all this great hockey in the West that no one cares about because no one's been exposed to it, even though the best hockey is being played out West.
Yeah. It was helped by the Wings being in the Western Conference. Even though as fans, we didn't like staying up late for those playoff games as we got older. But the Western Conference had a light shone upon it because the Wings were there. And the Wings were much like, when they were playing somebody, the TV cameras were on. And that's not the case now.
Yeah. And it's a shame.
It is.
But the NHL marketing arm is no one to blame but themselves.
Well, yeah. Here's another thing I'll criticize the NHL for real quick here when you talk about that. So the other day, I wanted to see the Wings-Rangers game really bad. It was a 12:30 game in MSG. I'm, like, looking forward to it. Turn on, like, NBC at 12:30, and I'm getting a Premier League soccer match. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. this is the last weekend of the regular season. This game means a lot. It's a good matchup. The Wings are trying to make the playoffs. Where is this game? It's nowhere to be found on NBC. Instead, they're showing Premier League, which I know is popular, but come on, NHL. Come on, NBC. You should be on with that. Yeah, okay, they showed the Penguins and the Flyers later, but how about a doubleheader? I mean, that's ridiculous. Terrible. Shame on all of them.
Yep. The NHL is doing a terrible job on that front.
Oh, yeah.
That's for sure.
But the question, Satchel, despite your unexcitement, is do you really believe the Red Wings can advance past the first round?
No.
I actually think they can.
Really?
Yes, and I'm only saying that only because the opponent is weakened by injury. Steven Stamkos is hurting. He's one of my favorite players. And no accident, he wears a reverse number of Steve Yzerman, the general manager of the Tampa Lightning.
Also noted Sergei Fedorov's number. Why does everyone say
yes.
he wears a reverse?
Also Sergei Fedorov's number. Yes, that's right.
Everyone likes to forget the fact that Fedorov wore 91 in Detroit. I'm not sure why.
Well, the only reason I equate it to Yzerman is one, because he's the GM, but also because Stamkos has stated that's his favorite player.
Yeah.
That was his favorite player growing up, yeah. I was not dissing Fedorov, but you're exactly right. Tampa Bay has some key injuries to key people right now, and the Wings might, in fact, find themselves, if they play well, and that still is questionable because the Wings are nothing but inconsistent, and Tampa Bay will still throw their best effort at the Wings, and probably a half-hurt Tampa Bay team probably still could beat the Wings, which is disappointing to think about. But if the Wings found themselves in the second round and got a break and had somebody upset somebody else and they drew, you know, the Islanders or Florida plays into the Wings game. I mean, the Panthers had trouble scoring. I mean, who knows what can happen? That's why you get in the playoffs. That's why I'm kind of excited about it, actually. I know that most Detroit fans will scoff at me, but, first things first, I think the Wings have a chance to win in seven this time, believe it or not.
All right, so here's my issue with the Red Wings. They can't win 5-on-5 hockey. So now they're counting on their power play to deliver. The problem is, and cue the laughter, right? They're counting on their power play.
Yeah.
And never mind the fact that their power play isn't delivering on a consistent basis, although it was better at the end of the season. The playoff hockey is different. You don't go on the power play as often. Teams tighten up. I mean, the Red Wings have trouble scoring during the regular season. You want to know what? Scoring during the playoffs is even harder.
Yeah.
I just don't see the Red Wings having enough offense to win a seven-game series. Because in a seven-game series, they're going to score 14 goals, an average of 2 a game.
Yeah.
Do you have any confidence in the Red Wings defense to hold the other team to 15 goals?
Well, that's the other side of the ledger. And then the inconsistent play goal is a major question mark. And so that's the other part that you're exactly right. And that's where the other side of the argument, Tampa half-hurt Tampa Bay team, probably might still be able to prevail just because of that ineptness by the Red Wings. That's what's frustrating. And the darndest thing here, Satchmo, is on paper, the Wings, if you weren't paying attention, you'd think the Red Wings were like one of the hottest teams in the East because they ended up with the third seed in their division. They backed into that. There should be like a, I don't know. I don't know if I like the way they do this seeding. And the Wings got extremely lucky. Extremely lucky.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a fan of the way the NHL does their playoffs. Let's just say that outright. It makes zero sense. And the Wings are lucky to be in the playoffs. Good for them. They're in. And look, I'll be happy if the Wings go on and do well. So don't get me wrong. I mean, it would be nice to see. I'm just not holding out hope.
Yeah, I think, Satchmo, you've captured the perspective of the entire Red Wing Nation. I don't think that anyone expects great things here, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. The puck may bounce a funny way, as Ron Mason used to say.
All right, so before we leave the NHL and go off to the Detroit Tigers, what are your expectations for the crowds at Joe Louis Arena in the playoffs?
Oh, God. That maybe there's actually people in the lower bowl seats. That is one of the most frustrating and embarrassing things about the Wings, and I can't stand it. And Detroit, to me, Satchmo, everybody, and we're both Detroiters, Satchmo, and everybody, and we love Detroit sports. And everybody talks about what a great sports town Detroit is, and that's true. But I really feel like we're kind of fair weather when it comes to hockey a bit now. I mean, I just feel like, you know, people only want to show up when it's Game 7 of the conference final and then the Stanley Cup final. And it's not acceptable. I mean, other arenas you would never see. You know, the Verizon Center, when the Caps play, the Caps have had so much frustration and ineptitude in the playoffs. But every damn seat in that Verizon Center will be filled and rocking when the Caps take the ice for Game 1. And you don't see that in Detroit. It's really frustrating to me. I'd like to be able to see butts in the seats, but I'm not sure that we'll see it. I think we're going to see a lot of empty red seats. You know, even if the Wings are up 2-0 in the series, we'll see a lot of empty red seats.
That's sort of my expectations are really low, too.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see some noise, and, you know, maybe the new arena will help that a little bit, but I don't know. I don't think they should have a new arena with 20,000 seats. I think they should have downsized it. I think they're overestimating.
Yeah. And let's face it, DB, Detroit's become a fair-weather sports town for every team except for the Lions.
Yeah, that's true, yes.
You don't see
Detroit
crowds at Comerica unless the Tigers are winning or expected to win. You don't see crowds at the Palace unless the Pistons are doing well. And you don't see crowds at the Joe unless the Wings are dominant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nope, I agree.
That said.
It's hardly. Joe Louis used to be one of the toughest places to play, and now it's like you know, a funeral atmosphere in there. You can hear a pin drop. It's turned into University of Michigan, the Big Blouse.
Yeah, well, the crowds at the Joe right now are as bad as the pizza served in the arena.
with Satchmo's firsthand knowledge of from visiting last year for the another highly filled the Big Ten hockey championship.
I mean, look, the pizza there is terrible, but. It's a little, I mean, for those of you that don't know, it's Little Caesars Pizza, right? That's served in the Joe.
Yeah.
But at least last year, the Little Caesars Pizza, as bad as it was, I mean, at least looked more appetizing than the crowd in the stands. I mean, it was terrible. all right.
Yeah, that's pretty sad.
That is pretty sad. It is spring, DB. Even though there's snow on the ground and a nip in the air, it is spring, which means baseball season is here.
That's a good setup, Satchmo. That's like that's the global warming setup for baseball season.
It's the Sonny Elliott setup.
Impersonation. The snow is on the ground, and that means baseball season is here. Are you suggesting, Satchmo, like Frank DeFore, that the baseball season might be a bit too long?
Just a bit.
See, Satchmo, I love baseball, so it can be 180 games, but I'm in the minority on that one, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway. DB, you root for a lot of baseball teams.
Yes.
You root for three, as far as I can tell, but possibly more.
Well, primarily the Tigers, and then I become a big Nationals fan. And if you're suggesting the Orioles,
I am.
Well, there are people in my life now who like the Orioles, but I'm not ready to – go full on rooting for the Orioles, but I do follow them a bit, if you want to say that, to be fair.
Okay. So,
I like the Cubs. I'm rooting really hard for the Cubs now. I want to see a championship in Chicago.
I think the Cubs belong.
That's why I want the dark clouds to continue swirling over the top of Wrigley Field.
Wrigley Field, exactly. The Cubs haven't won for 110 years. Why should we change things now? I mean, seriously.
I love it.
All right. So this is intriguing. You're not a full-on O's fan, but you do have the three teams plus the Cubs.
I follow the O's, though. I follow them.
You do follow the O's. So I follow the Mets. Nothing more needs to be said on that front.
The Mets, every pitcher has the same type of mullet on the Mets.
Well, yeah. They all go to the same barber.
Too funny.
It's like a team bonding ritual for them.
by the way, I'll just say this really quick. One of the best moments on Fallon in the last couple of years on the late Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon was when they sent Matt Harvey on the street to ask people if they knew who he was, and people were like, "You look like somebody. Did you play for the Yankees?" Like, they couldn't get his name right. It was pretty funny.
That, no, that was fun. So I follow the Mets, I follow the Nats, and I follow the Tigers. So those are the three teams I follow. But like I said, the Mets are the Mets, so there's no discussion required there. So let us talk about the Tigers, DB.
Yes.
The Tigers are off to a good start. They're off to a better start than Pablo Sandoval's belt. And can you believe he busted his belt while swinging a bat? How do you do that?
I can. He's the big hefty panda bear, Satchmo. I'm actually not surprised. I'm surprised Big Poppy didn't do that a long time ago.
Well, Big Poppy is like a supermodel compared to Kung Fu Panda, right?
That's true.
I mean, if you put Big Poppy and Kung Fu Panda next to each other, Big Poppy would look like Twiggy. That's lost, as Kornheiser would say, we lost the demo, Wilbon.
We rolled down. I think everyone under 40 just turned off the podcast.
All right.
Sorry
so,
about
maybe,
that, Podcast Nation.
That's
come
right.
On.
We'll come back. We'll start with Verlander, DB.
Yeah.
What kind of pitcher is Verlander now? He doesn't feel like an ace, but he doesn't feel like a terrible pitcher either.
Nope. I feel like Verlander, the best thing that happened to him was last year when he got hurt, and it forced him to not just go up there trying to smoke the ball by everybody, and he's had to change his pitching style a little bit. And so you're right. He doesn't feel like an ace, but the Tigers, I don't think they have an ace per se, so probably by default he's the ace, still a good pitcher. And I think that he improved last year. He was a bright spot on a disappointing team. And I think he's going to have a pretty good year. Not great, but he's not going to be a Cy Young winner, but I think he's going to have a pretty good year. And the Tigers will, hang around. I don't know if they're going to win their division. It's really tough to say. I think Kansas City is the best team in their division still right now. But the Tigers, will make a little run at it.
Yeah, so to me, that's interesting, right? He brings me to the second question I had, which is, it feels like the Tigers have the bats to contend. It all comes down to the pitching staff and the bullpen.
Yeah. that bad word in Detroit, the bullpen.
The bullpen. I mean, are we going to see a run on antacid at the Walgreens and CVS's in Detroit, or?
Oh, yeah. Count on it.
Yeah.
We already saw it in the first game of the year. We saw it with a new closer who has no context whatsoever of the history of what goes on when you put on the closer jersey in Detroit. And he already had a meltdown, and already I think people were buying Tums and whatever else, Prilosec OTC off the shelves.
Wow. You went upscale.
Yeah.
I was thinking Mela.
Mela.
All right. So you've got that. So the question is, but does DB, this is a legitimate question, do they have the pitching and bullpen to contend?
That's a question mark, because what I've seen so far is they have three good starters, Verlander, Anibal Sanchez, and George Zimmerman's a good pickup for the Nationals. Each one is probably, you know, right where they should be in this team's rotation. And then we saw the fourth starter the other day, some guy named Mike Pelfrey, who came off the scrap heap from Minnesota, who I've only just heard of the name. And I have a feeling it's one of those people that probably did well against the Tigers, but not against the rest of the league. So the Tigers thought, kind of maybe foolishly, that he could beat everybody else. And I don't want to throw him under the bus after one game, but if he pitches
but
like
that
for the
anyway.
Whole year, what did you say?
You don't want to throw him under the bus after one game, but you're doing that anyway.
I am, and I shouldn't be. That's not right of me. And then the fifth starter could be a kid or somebody else. I don't know. We haven't even seen the fifth starter yet. And the fourth starter could end up being a kid too, because Pelfrey might end up in the bullpen. I'm not sure. But unless one of these kids hanging around this depleted farm system is lights out, that's a concern. I do think they upgraded the bullpen pretty well. I think the front half of the bullpen is much better. Al Avila did a good job of what Dave Dombrowski could not do. So that I'm excited about that part. The question is, if one of those pitchers, the three that I mentioned, gets hurt, the Tigers are in a world of hurt. They could just be a good hitting team with no starting pitching and end up in fourth place, Satchmo.
Yeah, and that is the nature of baseball, right? People are going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Because you play for 1.5 million games.
Another cheap shot at the length of the baseball season, which will never change. It will only get longer when you make comments like that, Satchmo. Satchmo make comments and say, we need to start the season on St. Patrick's Day and end it at Thanksgiving.
Well, we're headed to that Thanksgiving ending the way it goes right now.
Well, we are, yes.
Yeah,
a little bit ridiculous.
So we're really not that far away from that.
Yeah, we're not that far.
All right. So those are those Tigres, the Washington Nationals, DB. Every year they're picked to win the NL East and win the World Series, and every year they don't.
And if you're a Nationals fan, I would not expect any division title or playoff appearance this year. I feel like the Nationals are fool's gold, Satchmo. The Nationals are a team in transition right now. The Nationals, unlike the Tigers, have a very, very good minor league system. They also have Bryce Harper, who's, you know, one of the most dynamite players in baseball right now. He's going to get paid a handsome sum of money in a couple of years when he becomes a free agent, either by the Nats or the Yankees or Red Sox or somebody with a lot of money that you can name. So the Nationals are somewhat exciting with that, and they certainly have one or two good pitchers with Max Scherzer and Strasburg is still pretty good. But the Nats, Satchmo, as an organization, baffle me. They've made some strange decisions. I don't like the way the team's run. The owners have rested themselves with this general manager that I think is sort of half-baked. And I don't have a lot of faith in the Nationals. The Nationals are an above 500 team, but they're like the Tigers in the way that I don't think they they're like the Tigers in terms of they'll probably finish third or fourth or, you know, well, they're in a weaker division, so maybe third or second. But I feel like the Nats' problem is their bats. They don't hit the ball as well as Detroit. If they have Detroit's bat, they might stand somewhat of a chance. But Yeah, they're kind of a mess, I feel like, Satchmo, more than a mess that people see.
Yeah, I get the sense that internally the Nationals are just a mess. The front office is a mess. The management staff is a mess. So while it looks like they feel a good team, the support system to make that team a championship team just doesn't exist.
No.
So that's my general sense of the Nats. The Chicago Cubs, DB, a team that you're following closely, is the Sith Lord Theo Epstein going to deliver a World Series to Wrigley Field?
The Sith Lord. You know, Satchmo, I really do feel it and believe it. I think Theo Epstein knows what he's doing. He turned around the Red Sox. The Cubs are doing this the right way. They're building a team. I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but I just feel like there's a positive momentum swing on the north side of Chicago, and this team is a legit playoff team for sure. I mean, so many things can happen. You look at the National League, and no one screams to me that they want to run away with it all. I mean, the Giants are good again. The Dodgers spend a lot of money, but somehow they always choke. The Mets are a good team, but can the Mets repeat what they did? That's sort of a question. I understand your feelings there. I mean, the Nats, Braves, they're all kind of meh. The Cardinals, I guess, are still pretty good. So that would cause me to have some stomach ulcers if I'm a Cubs fan, because that's the rival. And then the Pirates actually are a sneaky good team, too, in that same division. So it's not easy, but the Cubs are pointed in the right direction. Now, if I'm a Cubs fan, I'm really excited right now.
Is it possible, DB, that President Obama, as his final act as U.S. president, will rig it so the Cubs will win the World Series?
I bet that he would love nothing more than to go out with the Cubs winning the World Series. That would cap off his presidency. He would love that, actually. And, you know, maybe you're onto something. Maybe he will, maybe he will try. But there's a lot of curses to overcome, and a lot of Billy Goat curses to overcome there, which are much much harder to overcome than Babe Ruth curses, that's for sure.
Much stronger than the power of the presidency, that's for sure. Then finally, the team who, through relationship, you're interested in. The Baltimore Orioles, what is their status?
Well, so the Orioles are an interesting team because they have a collection of people on this team who are, to me, not really, you know, the O's for a while, as you can recall, when you lived in this area here a while back, Satchmo, the Orioles were coming out of that late 90s era where they were really good and didn't win a title, but they had Cal Ripken and a lot of those guys. And then they decided that they were going to start buying free agents like Albert Bell, and the bottom just fell out of that organization. They made some bad decisions, hired some bad people to run the team, went down into the gutter. At some point, they hired a pretty smart general manager, and then they started to rebuild their minor league system, and they've developed some players. And they have Manny Machado, who's one heck of a third baseman, and they have some people on this team, Matt Weiders. They have some good but unknown young pitchers. They have a really fun closer to watch, who's sort of a throwback, Darren O'Day. Looks like Dan Quisenberry, if everybody remembers the submarine-type style. It's hard to hit. So you have that, and I still am a doubter of this team, but they haven't lost a game yet. And as somebody in my workplace who's a big Yankees fan said, they feel strongly that the Orioles might be the team in the American League East this year. They could be this year's Kansas City. I have no idea, which is strange to think, but Kansas City was sort of that way too when you kind of think about it. I mean, there wasn't anybody on that team to begin with that you really knew that stood out, and all of a sudden they won a World Series. And so maybe that's true. Excuse me.
Yeah, I actively root against the Orioles, primarily because I dislike Frank Pietrangelo, the owner, who exacted an entirely too high a price for Major League Baseball to bring the Nationals into the district.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's a sore spot for. I mean, Pietrangelo is a turd. I mean, for people that live around here, Satchmo, Pietrangelo's comment burned into my head when he says nobody in D.C. knows anything about baseball. I mean, you insulted the people that put you where you are in the first place.
Exactly. All right, we've got about three minutes.
And I just wanted to say really quick, I love Baltimore. I love going to Baltimore. I like Baltimore even better than D.C., Satchmo. It's not snobby. It's real. It kind of reminds me of Detroit. The fans deserve good teams there. But Pietrangelo is sort of a puke. And some of those Orioles fans, Satchmo, they're a little like the Terps fans. You know, they have this sort of weird chip on their shoulder. They have this angst that I don't quite understand. And I don't know what that is. We can explore this on another podcast. But I don't get this whole we're better than we really are sort of thing. We'll save that for another day because we have a lot of time to talk. But, you know, we experienced that in College Park a couple years ago. And
yeah,
it's really sort of a weird thing. And I think that goes on there, and I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I think it's something in the crap meat. We've got just under 3 minutes remaining, DB, and I want to bring this up really quickly. Tim Izzo.
Oh,
who is Tim Izzo,
God.
You ask?
This is not funny anymore, Satchmo.
No. So when Tom Izzo was announced that he was being inducted into the NBA Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame, not the NBA Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame, ESPN went out with a breaking news alert, pushed it all over their phone app, saying, breaking news, Tim Izzo to the Hall of Fame.
I smell a big, fat, amazing blue rat, Satchmo.
DB, this is not the first
time. This is no longer just an accident, Satchmo.
No, this is not the first time, or the second time, or the third, or fourth, or fifth time.
No,
ESPN
has botched
the name of a Michigan State coach.
Yes.
We've had what? Mike D'Antonio, Mark D'Antoni.
Yeah.
Why can't they get the names of the Michigan State coaches right?
I think it's not that they're getting it wrong. I think somebody's doing it intentionally.
You think it's a University of Michigan person trolling Michigan State fans at ESPN?
Yes, I think it's. It looks like it's a mistake, but it's becoming too obvious to me that it's not just an error. When I saw Tim Izzo, I said, "You want to know what? Something amazing blue is going on somewhere at ESPN.com."
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's someone trolling. Excuse me, but I do think it is a distinct lack of respect towards the Michigan State program. Michigan State doesn't get talked about on ESPN at all unless it's, you know, unless the coaches are showing up to be on the air, or, you know, they happen to be in a game there. And that's the extent to which they're talked about. And so they consistently get the names wrong. And it's annoying and frustrating because Michigan State is a top-tier national football program, a top-tier national basketball program, and they're not treated as such. And, DB, it's getting to be very annoying and very frustrating.
It is, yeah. And I really think, and I don't know exactly what Michigan State can do about this, and I'll be quick about this because we're running out of time, but I think we've gotten to the point now where some people at Michigan State, Mark Hollis, need to take a trip to Connecticut and have a discussion with ESPN, because I think this is more than just accident. Something weird is going on, and I think it would behoove Michigan State to nip this in the bud, because something feels weird about it.
Yeah, something does feel weird about it. It's either that or just have Reese Davis to give him a seminar. Because he does get it. All right. Any final thoughts before the fight song plays us out, DB?
No, other than we'll have some more podcasts in the coming weeks. Stay with us. Lots to talk about. We have spring football. We have baseball we didn't touch on. And I want to go back, well, more NHL playoffs. I want to go back and talk about Big Ten basketball coaches on the hot seat for next year, Satchmo. I sort of made a list, and I want to share that in the next some people on some teams might surprise you that are in some real trouble, I think.
I think that sounds like a good plan. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.